So I thought I would start actually with a question that's not on the list for the mentor moms. They're like, lovely, thank you. But as I was thinking about our time together this morning, I feel like sometimes you get all the nitty gritty, but I want to just start out by asking you mentor moms, if you would share, when you think about this group of women, what is the greatest thing you have on your heart for them? What is when you think about the core desires for them, what's at the root of that? So we'll start there and then we'll get into the nitty gritty, but I just kind of the umbrella heart behind why you even do what you're doing.
Okay, I would just say off the top of my head, my biggest thing that I would love for you to embrace as mothers is just that, being mothers. And the gift that motherhood is, and the gift that your children are, and that it goes by so dang fast, which is so cliche, but it's true. And so just to embrace it and to love the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it's a high calling. And Rachel, what you shared last week at that, what you read that someone said, I can't remember who, Spurgeon. Well, yeah. So Spurgeon. So I can't say it quite as good as he did, but what you said, I say too. And what he said, I say too. That was amazing.
I'll echo the same thing. What popped right in my head as soon as Christina said it is there's nothing on earth that anybody's doing anywhere that's more important than what you guys are doing every day. Like, there's no president or whatever seems celebrity, whatever, that sounds important. There's nothing more important that they're doing than what you're doing every day. So if you're feeling like you're, oh, I should be doing, and then fill in the blank. I should be doing some sort of ministry out. You are doing ministry. Like, you're forming and shaping people. I mean, come on. Like, is there anything more important than that? So it feels really unimportant, and it's hard to remember that when you're changing diapers and wiping noses. But looking back from where we are, we can affirm that it is important, and it will someday feel really worth it. It's just a long game.
A long game that goes really quick. Ditto and ditto. The other thing is that you have to remember that they're God's children and that he loves them more than you and that you're here to guide them along, but it's his job to bring them along and sanctify them and all of that. So focus on your relationship with God and be a model of that instead of trying to create little moralists out there that path looks straight. 'Cause the heart is crooked. It's a really good one, right? But anyway, that's all I would say.
That's
don't try to, yeah. Just if I were to do it over again, I would focus more on my walk with the Lord and not so much worrying about how the world perceived my kids.
It's hard going last because they said everything that I was thinking, and I was even thinking what Rachel said last week. It is such a high calling, and now I still have high schoolers, so I'm not totally out of it, but starting to see the fruits of the labor and like all the hard work, and you're seeing these people that are like growing into adults, and it's beautiful to see, and I love what you said. Each child is so individual, and so seeing that, I always try to speak that into my boys, and seeing like God made them all so different, and they all need to be parented so different, and just trying to see them how God sees them and how God created them, and you can even see it now, you know, I can see things in my son that I saw when he was a baby. And I think that God has given us as mothers those eyes. And just, I don't, I don't know. This is a beautiful season, and I know it's a hard season. I know, but it's also really, really beautiful, and there are rewards in the end for sure.
Okay. And Mentor Moms, I want to remind you, don't have to answer every question. If you feel so inclined to just allow others' answers to stand, that's fine. But we love hearing from all of you too. So on that one, I did want you all to answer. So thank you. Okay, we're going to get into some nitty-gritty questions. You guys had some really good ones. I'm going to start out with one that is, a doozy. What has been most helpful for you in navigating marital difficulties? Along the lines of, are there areas you fundamentally disagreed with your husband about something, and how did you handle it?
Yes.
For us, number one is communication. You have to talk. And sometimes when communication doesn't necessarily work, I am totally for counseling. I think sometimes someone that is outside and doesn't know you and you can go someplace and be vulnerable, and your husband can talk and you can talk and somebody can hear you, and then they'll say something and you're like, oh, that makes sense. And so I'm not ashamed. We've gone to counseling numerous times through. We've been married 21 years, and I just think having an outside source is helpful, or even a trusted other couple, an older couple that maybe you trust. And I just, communication and then an outside source, I would say.
Some areas, well, there has been times where I didn't trust business partners of my husband, and it was really frustrating when it didn't go in a good direction, and I really wanted to, well, I probably did say I told you so, but but my heart, like, that was the wrong approach. Probably our most difficult challenge, is going through that, because it really affected us financially. And I think, out of all the issues in our marriage, financial would probably have been our biggest issue, which brings up other issues in, you know, just how you live out your life. And we chose for me to stay at home with the boys, and I kind of worked intermittently in there. So that put challenges on our finances, but at the same time, that was a priority. So I really had to work at not talking out my, I needed to be supportive, and speak those positive words out, and sort of just shut up on the areas, because that wasn't helpful. I mean, he already knew that what happened. So when they do something that is probably a mistake or wrong, us telling them that, that's not new news like that. So, for me, not communicating was probably the better end. And we talk a lot. We walk daily. Like, that's kind of our thing. Shoulder to shoulder, talking through life's issues and raising our kids. And that's sort of our therapy. My son just asked us the other night, we had dinner with him, and he's like, so do you and dad go to counseling? And we're like, no, do we need one? Like, he's like, I think everyone should go to a counselor. We're like, we're not going to one now. Like, that'll just bring up too many issues. So if you don't go to a counselor, I highly recommend putting that baby in a stroller and walking every day, and just talk it out through that.
What I would say kind of piggybacks a little bit off what Amy said, and that is, and actually what Michelle said this morning too, there's your relationship with your husband is way more important than any issue that's bothering you. And I say this not because I did this well, but because it's hindsight. So things that felt really, really big, like the hill I wanted to die on at certain points, I look back and think, you know what? It was far more important for me to respect him and treat him kindly than to win. I like to win, and it's not doesn't work well in a marriage when that's your sensibility. So if I would say be respectful, be quiet. If you have something that's really bothering you for longer than feels comfortable, and then if you really feel like this is a hill that I need to die on, then I would say still stay quiet and go seek out somebody that you respect or a counselor to help the two of you come to a meeting of the minds on a difficult issue. But fighting about it, even if you win, you've lost.
Well, I didn't feel like I really had anything to say because this was a really hard thing in our marriage because I'm married to a very strong man. And I, for very many years, was very weak. And so when we would fight, he would become strong and I would become weak. So a little bit different than what you said. I would say if you're like me, I'm finally now at 53, figuring out what it means to have a voice in my marriage, in my life, in all sorts of places. So if you're like that in your marriage, then I say get somebody to talk to help you understand why you feel like you don't have a voice. Understanding who you are as a person and where you've come from is really, really important. And I thought that I understood that because I've had freaking years of counseling. But it's just now, maybe I'm just getting older so my brain is able to understand, or I don't know, or I'm dense or whatever, I don't know. So I don't even know what my advice is. I don't even know really what I just said, other than you have a voice. You don't have to die on a hill. Or, I mean, even my daughter said to me growing up, and she felt like she had to actually step in for me and fight my husband for me because she sort of saw me as not being able to speak my mind, which is kind of sad. But whatever. I mean, she's learned something through it. She's learned in her marriage now, like, oh, actually, I don't need to fight every fight like I thought my mom needed to do. So it all equals out in the end somehow. So anyway, just find your voice if you don't have one.
Shut up if you had a loved one.
I'm going to ask another marriage question since we're there. How have you handled finances in your marriage? Any insights you can offer, things you've learned over the years?
I love this question. Here's another thing. So when we first got married, so again, Mark's very strong. And so he kind of handled all the finances. And so I would have to go and go like, Dad, can I have like $5 to put gas in my car? Dad, can I have 50 cents to go buy coffee or whatever it was? Coffee was 50 cents back then. And we had a lot of debt. We kind of spent money willy-nilly. And then we came across a man named Dave Ramsey, and he has changed our life. And we do the envelope system, and we do all the things. So if you don't know who Dave Ramsey is, listen to his podcast, read his book, Total Money Makeover, and you will have freedom in your finances. It has been life-changing for us. We've been at like 12 years now, and it's been amazing. But it was not always amazing.
Nothing comes to mind.
Shout out to Dave Ramsey. But the principle behind that is debt is slavery, and it's such a burden on you that you can't overflow and give out of your resources or your time because you're chained to the debt. So it's really contrary to our entire society and what they believe as far as, you know, creating debt is good and all that. So anyway, look into it.
I also wrote down just as far as my husband and I, did you guys do Crown Ministries?
Oh, yeah.
Before Dave Ramsey, there was Crown Ministries. And so we did that when we were like newly married. So it kind of got us on, you want to be on the same page, you know? So, but there's also like my husband's not the best with them. With numbers and paying bills, so it was kind of known like I'm good at that. So we've kind of always like I pay all the bills. I kind of know, but again, it's communication because he knows what's going on, but I'm kind of in charge of all of our finances. So I think there's always one in the family, you know, in the relationship that you know that that's their strong suit, but they also need to be open and the other person needs to know what's going on. So not just have one person be in control and they only know what's going on and like give you an allowance. You know, I think that you need to both be on the same page and know both know what's going on.
So what Jenny said was interesting to me because in our relationship, like for the first probably 15 years, I handled the finances. It's more in my lane. But at some point, it became very evident that I needed to stop doing that and for a variety of reasons and let Mike handle it. And I had a lot of fear involved with that. Like, what if he pays a bill late? Then we get a late charge. Like, again, things that seem huge at the time that you look back and think, oh, my gosh. But I think money, you know, money and sex are like the two hot buttons in a marriage, right? But your marriage is the ground in which God is working things out in you. And money is another area that's, they're sort of flags for what's going on in your heart. Because I've figured out that a lot of what I've learned about my relationship with God, I could have just looked at what my issues were with my husband and learned the lesson a long time ago if I'd been paying attention. So for me, I have had to learn to let go of control, trust my husband, trust God, trust that my husband loves me, trust that God loves me, so that I can not, like, you know, act like a scared little squirrel trying to, you know. And money was kind of a representation of that. Like, I didn't want him to pay the bills because I wanted to, like, know what was going on and control everything. And yet I have found that to the extent that I have let go of that, it's super freeing. Like, I don't even want to know. Like, I don't even know half of what's going on with our finances anymore, I'm sorry to say. And I don't care. And it's great. Like, ignorance is bliss. But anyway, all that to say, it's just, it's good when you feel yourself emotionally reacting, whether it's in your marriage or whether it's about money, try to get at what's going on in you that is triggering you.
So good. I'm going to ask another marriage question, just, and this kind of goes along the lines of what you just said. You guys made a big decision in terms of changing financial structure in your family. What was the process for you and your husband in big decisions? How did you go after those big decisions and make? Yeah.
There's an angel over there.
That's where the insight comes from, Jessica.
I think for us, I'm trying to think. I kind of have a bad memory. But I think for us, when it was a big decision, we would talk about it. And then really kind of whoever cared more about a specific thing is kind of who we gave it to. However, because my husband is the leader of the household, and if I strongly disagreed with something, we wouldn't move forward. But if I was more like, well, I don't know, no, because he's the leader of the household, that's my opinion, we would go with him. But usually it was whoever cared more. Like, if I cared more about something, we would go with me. If he would care more, then we would go with him. That's kind of how we did it. We would just talk about it and discuss it. And I think mothering, though, like stuff with your kids, I really believe strongly that mothers, God has given you such a deep gut instinct that a lot of decisions about your kids come from you. And I think your husband should really listen to you when it comes to issues of your kids. I'm so, like, talking with my hands. I don't normally do that.
Why am
I
doing that?
All I can say is there were things that I felt very strongly about at the time that I can think about right now that I was wrong about. But I'm a really good arguer. It's a gift. And so there were definitely times where Mike just was like, you know what? Like, you win, and I'm sorry I won. So, you know, again, no, he's a one.
With a nine wing, for sure.
No, no, with a two wing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the two of us, I mean, we're both stubborn, like, yeah. But, yeah, so just be careful, I guess.
I'm trying to think what major decisions, like, again, we are walking and talking gets through a lot of those, so a lot of them didn't feel like these big decisions because we're kind of talking through them a lot. But I'm thinking of, like, kids going to college, selling a house, buying a house, like those things like that, we really would come together. Discipline, that'll probably come later. So,
that
one, I'll let you wait for.
Right?
Yeah, a lot of talking. I was thinking of one in particular that this was probably a couple of years ago that we did, and so I thought, oh, that's a good example. So, I really wanted to do safe families, and I brought it to my husband. And he was like, no. And it was something that I felt really strongly about. Like, I really want to do this. And he was like, no. And, but he also knew how much I wanted to do it. But so I kind of had to be patient. And he, instead of making that decision right then, you know, it took like probably a couple months. And then he came back to me and he was like, you know what? I realize like how important this is to you. Like, let's go for this. So, again, communication, but also, you know, patience. I mean, I don't necessarily, I mean, there are some things where you do have to make a decision right at that moment, but there's also time that you can wait and things, you know. So.
This one you might come up on fairly soon, and that is, like, what type of education you're going to do for your kids, whether it's private school or homeschool or public school. And I was really passionate about my kids going to a private Christian school, and Robert grew up in the public school, and honestly, they'll survive whatever decision you make. I really believe that. We had a great experience at Mariners Christian, and it was, you know, there were times where we were just like, wow, this is where we're supposed to be, and then there were other times where we're like, what is the sucking sound out of our bank account? when you have three in private school. And so I really think, and then don't even bring up when you add up all the years of private education and you put that number out in front of your husband after he said we should do public school. That's a game changer right there. So that is a really big decision. And I think that is where a lot of, you know, arguing can come up or whatever, but I think there's a lot of things that you have to look at: your time, your resources, and, you know, what the school district that you look in, and then don't panic. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just one more thing to add. So, I think it's really important to talk about kind of a bigger picture before you get to where you're in the middle of trying to work out an issue. So it's good on your walks that you're taking, because Amy told you to. Talk about what your shared vision is for your family. It doesn't have to be something that puts pressure, but just even if it's a conversation where you think like, hey, you know, we want our kids to have these character qualities, or we want to pursue God in this way. You know, you have, for the big decisions, you have scripture that's kind of the third party that helps you mediate maybe differences of opinion, but it helps, because some things aren't laid out in scripture, like there's no thou shalt go to private school. sometimes it's not explicit, but if you guys are talking through how you want to integrate God's word into your family, then when these things come up, you can go back to, well, hey, we don't want to do this because this doesn't support what we agreed to already, and then it's less of a fight.
That's really good. Did you follow that advice?
Perfectly.
I actually don't like inserting myself into the mentor mom panel because I'm not a mentor mom. But I am going to actually just speak into this one. Is Drake and I have had to make some pretty major life decisions, even including life and death. One of the things I will say is we are not just a couple, just the two of us. God is intimately involved in our relationships. He has desires. He has a heart in all of the decisions that we make. So talking about scripture, but also we need to be prayerful when these big decisions come up. God wants us to be discerning. He wants to provide wisdom. He wants to guide us and lead us. And so I think it's really important that we're not only prayerful together, but we're also prayerful personally, like saying, God, will you move my heart if my heart needs to be moved? Will you show me what I need to see? And then I think we also want to have a relationship with our husband where we can trust them, that they want what's best too. And I think that's important to keep in mind. They want the very best too. And even though we're coming at it from different angles, to trust that in them and that their heart is right, just like your heart is right. And then pray for God to bring those, to align those hearts. And I think he does, not always. And then there might be that point of submission or that point of bringing more strength. But I actually just want to remind you, pray when there are big decisions, because God wants to enter into your relationship in those ways. So, okay. Let's move to parenting. And there's a lot of questions about discipline. So how have you navigated differing philosophies about disciplining your children? Even differing philosophies with grandparents, spouses, friends. So it wasn't just with the spouse, but any differing philosophies, how have you navigated those?
My husband and I have pretty much always been on the same page in regards to discipline, so that was never an issue. But I liked that you kind of added the outside, because there were definitely – I had friends that we disciplined different than, or my sister and her family we disciplined different than. And you just have to do what works best for you and not honestly care what other people think. You and your husband, if you're on the same page, you know your kids – you know what works for your family. I'm a people pleaser by nature, so sometimes I would be like, oh, well, am I, like, I don't want to do that in front of them because, you know, what are they going to think of me? And it's like, you have to let those things go and do what you know is best for your family and your kids.
We did pretty well on the discipline with each other, because we've had a philosophy that we shared on how we would approach it. And we approached it that we would not be child-centered parents, that we would be marriage-centered parents, and child-centered parenting can go either, you know, in the permissive direction or the really legalistic direction. And I would say I would be more permissive and he would be more like that. And so we complemented each other in that way. So if I sensed myself kind of heading in the more permissive direction, like, I would have to, you know, let him take charge in that direction. And then if he kind of went like the hammer, I'd be like, because honestly, if you can't follow through with whatever the hammer brought down, and you're the one having to hammer all day long, then it's a lose. So I would have to do a little sidebar, and we'd be like, I'm really not going to keep in his room for 4 hours a day. So, so those are the little details, but I think the main focus was that this little person was not going to take over the house, and then this person and his band of merry men with three boys. So that was kind of where we were headed.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We tended to be on the same page as well. And neither one of us are, I think, of the temperament to get too bogged down in what other people's comments were. So I feel like what I will say will probably relate to another question, so I'll pass
to you, actually.
Okay, so will you share your best practices for discipline, especially with toddlers?
Well, you have something?
Well, I like what you said about consistency and follow-up.
Well, the other thing is, this was all, we went through this whole parenting thing here at church and kind of took nuggets out of it, and it was called Growing Kids God's Way. Now we grow dogs God's way. We're much better dog parents than we were kid parents. The shock collar has a lot to do with it. But we parented with keeping in mind other people. So when we would go out to a restaurant and we would be with our kids, we would try to teach them, you know, we are here in a restaurant enjoying dinner, and we want to be aware of the other people who are celebrating dinners or having a conversation or whatever. So it wasn't all about our kids getting to go out to dinner and do whatever they want at the table. So it was a lot of me not sitting at the table or Robert not sitting at the table, but it just never was just about our kids and, you know, like throwing the sugar packets or doing the whatever. I mean, we always, now you guys have, you know, the phone and the iPad and all that. Come on now, let's get some real parenting in. Leave those at home and see what dinner feels like at a restaurant. We had to survive off of suckers and stacking the sugar packets, stacking the jams. If we could quietly do the football through the, you know, that's how we did it. But a lot of coloring. But my point is, at the grocery store, if your kid is like ripping off all the price tags down the aisle, you know, you're like, oh, well, I was keeping occupied while I shop. You explain to them, you know what? We don't pull the stickers off because the lady behind us isn't going to know what the price of the beans are. And the guy who works here now has to go find more stickers to put on the thing. So we're not going to do that because we're thinking of the people who are coming behind us. Or the biggest thing was the grocery cart thing. Remember that whole Ezzo thing?
I still do it to
this day. And this was it. It was the whole grocery cart guilt. Like, you're at the grocery store, you've got your kids, and you're like, wah, and you put the grocery cart back in that darn corral, and you don't want to, but you do it because you're thinking about the other people coming behind you. Like, if I put my cart in the middle of the spot, then the little lady who can't park, you know. So those are the things as you're teaching them. You're not saying, you know, don't do that. You're saying why you're not doing that. Like, why we're not running around the restaurant doing laps. Why we're not, you know, because the person carrying the water might, you know, those things. So you're teaching the why behind everything. And even though they're little, I think you can still explain the why. And that as you train them in the why, you're going to have to do a lot of whys when they get older because they're better arguers. So that's all. You leave the restaurant. You leave the grocery store. I've left so many carts full of groceries and then really guilted them. Do you realize that mommy just had to leave the store with a thing full of groceries? Now mommy has to come back later when daddy gets home. And the guy at the grocery store, he has to put all those groceries back. But we're still leaving because your behavior is horrible. You know? So we all lose right now.
I was going to say that. I was going to say consistency, and your word means something. So when my son was two, we used to have this play date at the park every Tuesday, and I loved it because all my friends were there with their kids, and so it was like my social time and his social time. Well, he was going through this phase where he would just randomly go up and like hit a kid. So I told him, if we go to the park and you hit a kid, we are leaving. Well, I didn't like it either because I was having to leave my friends, but I had to stick by the word. And I remember the very first time he even, like, looked at me and hit the kid, like, what are you going to do, Mom? And I'm like, we're leaving. Two times we did that, and then he never hit a kid again. And so when you say, hey, we're going to leave the park, when he hits the kid, you do what you said you were going to do. And you have to be consistent. Like, they will test you till no end, and you have to let them know that what you said means something.
I don't know if this specifically answers the question, but I think
it's really important to know your child and know their limitations so you don't put them in situations where you've built in automatic failure. Mm-hmm. So if you have a kid that, you know, isn't going to be able to sit through dinner at the restaurant, then you know what, just, I hate to say it, but don't go out to eat at a sit-down restaurant till they're a little bit older. Or call in an order ahead of time so the food's there by the time you arrive. I don't know what you need to do, but don't set them up to fail all the time because that just frustrates them and you. But at the same time, it always bothers me just when I'm out and I see this happening. There are standards, and I love what Amy articulated that we learned in the course. There are things that are important that we want to train into our kids, and you don't want to compromise on those. So those things, it's more important to you that your child grows up and becomes a person that is aware and sensitive to other people. Trust me, when they're 20, you're going to wish that you had spent time training on that than other things that come in. So don't make excuses. Just find a way to solve the problem. And sometimes it's really frustrating and it's really overwhelming to feel like somebody who's 2.5 feet tall is owning you. But you'll find a way. Like if you just step back and take some time and strategize, and maybe that's where you do want to get input from other people or just sit down with your husband, figure out, okay, how can we win against this tiny person? Because we can. We're older and smarter. We can do it. But, you know, you don't – this is one that really always always gets me. When you're trying to train your child to be a friendly person or to be polite – and an adult comes up and your child runs around behind you or won't, you know, look the person in the eye. It's a process. I get it. But don't say, oh, so-and-so is shy. And then give up trying. Because ultimately, this kid does need to look someone in the eye and shake their hand. So you want to be working in small ways to train the character quality that you want and not label them into, oh, well, so-and-so shy, so they get a free pass to be a jerk the rest of their lives and not look somebody in the eye, right? We all have our things we struggle with, and your job is to help them overcome the things that they struggle with. But where knowing them comes into play is it can help you find strategies to help you solve the problems. So we had a situation once where my kids were playing on the floor and Erin could be, she could be a pill, I guess is the best way to put it. So Ian was always very sweet and compliant, first kid, and Erin was like, you know, the one that was grabbing the toys and that sort of thing. And so I think she hit him. I don't remember. She did something that was not kind when they're playing on the floor together. And I realized that when I kind of came at her forcefully, like, you know, in an authoritarian way, she would just glaze over and just, like, you know, take her punishment, whatever it was. And, like, it was just like a rock skipping off the water. It wasn't getting in there. And so I thought, okay, we got to figure something else out. So I pulled her aside and I said, gosh, you know, it must really make Ian sad when he's sharing his toys with you and when you're playing together and you hit him. Like, he must really feel like you don't love him very much, and he must feel sad that he's, you know, giving to you and you're, I don't know what I said, it was better than what I'm saying now. Anyway, she, like, the wall came down, she burst into tears and went up and hugged him and said she was sorry. So I got the desired result, but if I had said, you know, go sit in the corner, like, she would have done her time, come out of jail and been the same person. So anyway, I hope that makes sense.
Tracy, do you have anything to add?
No.
Okay. Well, then I'm just going to ask one last question. And if there's nothing else to share, in the rear view mirror, is there anything, any hindsights that you have from your disciplining of your children?
I would have let them fail a little more. Instead of, as my child taught you 2 weeks ago, Don't parent out of fear. I don't think I parented out of fear all the time, but it definitely was a temptation to not let them fail, in that it would be a reflection on me and Robert if our kids looked or did something in a certain way that, you know, wasn't, you know, according to how we raised them. But they are going to do that. So it's better that they do that, you know, when they're under your roof. We let them, they failed a lot, but I think even when they're littler, letting them kind of figure it out, and especially as young adults, you know, the firstborn, I think, yeah, that's enough said. I'll just go through therapy right now.
I just wrote down some things feel bigger than they really are during that time. And just to kind of, like, I remember, like, clothes and, like, what they would wear. Like, just, I don't know. Those things don't really matter, you know. Like, especially, I think it's a good time to let them express the same way that they kind of have control of something. Like letting them pick out their outfit or what they want to wear. So, yeah.
Thank you, you guys. I'm adding something else again. Don't be afraid to have high expectations of your kids. I think we're in a society that lowers expectations for children, and I think we can raise our expectations of our kids. And I also, this hasn't been said, but I also believe that there is, and you're going to have, this might trigger, but I believe that especially when they're tiny, physical discipline can help to communicate. And one of the things, I didn't do a lot of spanking, but I actually would squeeze the web of Jesse and Judd's hand to just let them know, pay attention, what I'm telling you matters. It doesn't hurt them. That isn't even painful. But that wet, just squeezing the web of their hand as I was, if they were doing something wrong and I was communicating them, this is when they were really little, that just made them go, oh, okay, I got to pay attention to what mom's saying. So don't, we're in a society that says, don't touch your kids, don't do anything. I actually think that's one of the ways that our kids pay attention. It's one of the ways that we can use, scripture actually says, spare the rod, spoil the child. Like, there is room for us to actually discipline in those ways as well. So, okay. Okay. We're going to move on to parenting time and values. So, what is something you are so glad you did as a mom when your kids were really little and something you wish you didn't do? What is something that you are so glad you did as a mom when your kids were really little and something you wish you didn't do?
I love to play with my kids, so I played with them. I love to build forts. I was a really good fort builder. With three boys, I loved the beach. We hung out at the beach a lot. So I took the time to play. The laundry is never going away, ladies, just so you know. It's still there. My mom, when we were growing up, we lived down here, and in June, it was always gloomy, June gloom. And if the sun came out in June, we went to the beach, whether we got our chores done or not. Like, it was like, we're going to the beach because the sun's out. So I kind of took that carpe diem parenting. And sometimes you do that. Sometimes the chores stay and you go and do something fun. I would have yelled less, held my tongue, my swear words. One of my precious little names for my children. This is vulnerable. Little shits. So that is what I probably would not say as much. So if this disqualifies me from the Mentor Mom panel, then I will dismiss myself. But that one just rolled off the tongue. You little. The other thing, I don't know, raise your hand if the most satisfying parenting move you've ever done is just pulled the car over to the side of the road and slammed those brakes on. It scares them and is so effective as a parenting technique. Like, if you don't stop, I'm going to pull over. And you do. And it's super easy and it's really effective.
I think for me, something that I loved that I did when my kids were little was very physically affectionate with them, which is interesting because I'm not a super affectionate person. But with them, I just kind of couldn't get enough of them, and so I was very physically affectionate. The thing I wish I did more would be pray. I mean, I just think I was so caught up in the busyness of life and the minutiae of life and all of life. That I wish I would have prayed more when my kids were younger. I do that a lot now, but it's because the stakes are higher. And I wish I would have started that when my kids were younger, is really spent focused time in prayer for each of my kids.
I would say, gosh, it's hard to think of something I'm glad I did. I guess Ian, when he was 3, was diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum. And I fought for him like a warrior. So I'm proud of that. Like,
that was before there was
anything. Like, he was really high functioning, so like he didn't belong over here and he didn't belong over here, and I had to go to war, and mind you, I was 23 at the time. So yeah. That was a lot. But I feel like part of why he is who he is because of that, and he says the same, so I'm really proud of that. What I wish I would have, well, I wish I would have liked to play more.
I had to play with him.
Like every minute. That's somewhat true. Every minute on the floor. Playing cars, I was like watching the clock. Like, when is this going to be over? When is it time to eat something or do something or go somewhere? Like, ah. So I'm only saying that so that if you feel the same way, you know you're not alone, that going to the park is not fun. Like, you don't get to sit there ever. Like, not once. They want you, like, right there, which is sweet and beautiful and super annoying. And I would echo Amy in that my biggest regret is, particularly with Aaron, is not letting natural consequences take their course. And it wasn't because, like, I did better with my kid who was struggling than with my kid who was good at everything. Because I got so, like, so enamored with how good she was at everything that I tried to make her more perfect. And it was really whack. I should have... You know, if she procrastinated, I should have let her fail, because that is what builds character.
I was really good at forming traditions for our family and creating, like, we used to do this camping trip with, like, 16 families, and we did it every summer for about 10 years, and I would organize the whole thing. And if you ask we've been on some pretty amazing vacations. And if you ask my kids to this day, what is their favorite vacation we've ever been on? It's camping at Carpinteria with all the kids. I mean, and so I was really good at just creating these traditions that my kids looked forward to every year. And one thing that I regret, and I feel like I kind of caught this, but my kids were a little older, but I remember I read a blog one time, and it was being what's called a wet hair mom and just jumping in with your kids and playing in the ocean and just being with them in play. And I think a lot of times for me, having boys, I didn't feel like I fit in with the things that they liked. And so I would kind of let my husband do those things. Like, my husband would go play with them in the ocean and I would be at the beach, but I'd be on the sand. And I remember I read this blog, and they were probably just about going into their teenage years, and it really convicted me. And so I changed it. And so now my boys tease me, like, oh, now you're a wet hair mom, because we go to the beach and I get in the ocean. And So even though there are things that you can look back on that maybe, oh, I wish I would have been like that, you can change it. And, you know.
Speaking of traditions, Jenny, you just said you're good at them. Favorite holiday traditions? And if we want to get into Santa, how did you handle Santa?
We did do Santa. I feel like there's something magical about Santa, and we never took the focus off Jesus. Like, my kids knew what the holiday was about and who Jesus was and what we were celebrating, but it was also like fun and magical to have Jesus. And we never had that problem. I hear people say, like, well, if your kid finds out one day that Santa's not real, then they're going to believe that Jesus isn't real. And that didn't happen. Like, when they found out that Santa wasn't real, they were kind of like, we kind of figured, like, you know, I don't know. So that was kind of, we did Santa, but my kids always knew the focus was Jesus. And with holiday traditions, I am good at traditions, and we've literally done the same thing their entire lives. Mm-hmm. And regards to Thanksgiving down to Christmas Eve to Christmas Day. And one year I was just kind of like, I don't want to do any of this. Like, so we planned a vacation and we went to Nicaragua over Christmas. And it was my greatest Christmas that I've ever had. But like, and we didn't do any presents. Like, we were there for 2 weeks. It was beautiful. But they're always like, we're not going on vacation over Christmas again, are they? Are we? And I'm like, what? Wasn't that amazing? But they love the tradition. And so, even as teenagers now, they like to do the same thing. They like that consistency. So for Thanksgiving, we go away with my family. So we rent like an Airbnb or something, and we do 3 or 4 days away for Thanksgiving, and we've always done that. And then traditionally for Christmas, Christmas Eve, is my dad's birthday. So we go to breakfast for my dad's birthday, and then we go to church that night, and then we go to dinner after church, and then we go Christmas light looking. Like, it's like this, it's totally simple, but they love it and they look forward to it every single year. And I can never change that pattern. And then the next morning I make a big Christmas breakfast. And ever since my oldest son was born, I didn't want to be one of those people that was running all around on Christmas Day. So from the very first day, from the very first year my first son was born, I said, and I've been doing this now for 20 years, I make a huge breakfast on Christmas morning, and our door is open all day long, but we do not leave. And if you want to see us, you can come over, and I'm sure that will change once my kids get married, and I'm not there yet. But for right now, it's still working, and everyone knows my parents come over, my husband's parents will come over, and we just stay at home, and we have breakfast together, and it's just a very simple day, and they love that.
I have two of my sons are married now, so we share the holidays. But the Thanksgiving has always been really important. I love that holiday because it's just about family and being together. Christmas I struggle with a little bit more as I get older. I think when grandkids come in the picture, it'll kind of get more fun again. Right now it just feels like complicated with where people are going and all of that. But as far as, we have always hosted Christmas Eve, and so that's important to my kids. They know we do soup after church, and anyone's invited, kind of a thing, people that don't have a place to go, or and a lot of my other cousins and stuff come, so they all kind of know that Christmas Eve is with us, and they enjoy that, so that they've kind of carried that on with their wives, where they come to our house for Christmas Eve. The Santa thing, we did Santa, and Robert really loved being, doing the whole, like, make coal marks on, you know, footsteps and, you know, eat the cookie and do the whole thing. And our oldest just, he never wanted to let go of Santa. And then when Trevor came along, Trevor was kind of over it, but Kyle still was like, he didn't want to give that up. Like, the bell still rings true. And then my youngest, I think he and Trevor were like, yeah, we're over it. But they still liked the idea of it, but it just wasn't as magical as it was for Kyle. We also, Robert grew up Jewish, and so we never did the Hanukkah, like the whole gifts. And, you know, like that's a hard no. We are not doing 8 nights of gifts and Christmas. Pick one. So, but the boys did like lighting the candles for Hanukkah, and the oldest boy, you know, would get to light the candle and, you know, the whole thing. So we did that. Passover, that is one tradition that we have kept. And I was going through some pictures, and it was just really cute seeing them at the table doing Passover. Tonight I'm teaching that at Abide at night in this classroom. But so that tradition we do, and they look forward to that. And what was the other thing?
You did it all.
Yeah, Santa. I'm pro Santa.
We were pro Santa as well. My only, and this is just in my mind, is I didn't ever want to directly lie to my kids. And so if they said, you know, well, how does, you know, fat Santa fit down skinny chimney? I'd say, what do you think? You know, if they ever asked the direct question, I'd kind of deflect. And then I figured if they ever asked me, is there a Santa, I'm going to have to say yes. Like, that's, they have never asked me that question.
You have to say yes.
I would have to say yes. No, yes. That there's no Santa.
Yes.
No
Santa.
Oh, yes. Yes. I would have said the truth.
Santa, yes.
What do you think? Yeah. still to this day, I do gifts from Santa, and like last year we did stockings, although last year my kids were like, I think we're done. I was like, hallelujah. Anyway.
You have to keep it up. Like Santa had separate wrapping paper, or you didn't wrap. So, and then.
They noticed the handwriting too. Like, Mom, why does Santa write in your handwriting? I'm like, what do you think?
And every year you have to keep it up for a long time.
So aim low. No. As far as traditions, I would just encourage you not to feel overwhelmed, because the smallest, dumbest thing will probably be the thing your kids latch onto as your thing. For us, a lot of it is food. Like, there are certain things that our family only eats on Christmas or Thanksgiving. And so that food becomes like something that everybody really looks forward to on that day. We have another thing. Aaron and I were in line at the art store one time, and it was like a really long line because it was around the holidays, and there were a bunch of magnets, and we were just like, and so there was this pickle magnet, and so we just started talking about this pickle magnet, and it became a thing. So I secretly bought the pickle magnet and put it in her stocking, and she was like, oh, the pickle magnet. She still has it on her fridge to this day. But so every year now I get her something that has to do with pickles, like, and there are tons of pickle stuff, you guys. There's like pickle ornaments. I got her an art apron with a pickle on it, like pickle pens, pickle gum, pickle band-aids, whatever. So not expensive, but it's like a fun little thing we have between us. So, you know, if you find a fun little thing, just keep doing it and it'll become special for your family.
This is actually a good one. My aunt used to do this every year, and I loved it as a child, and it just wasn't practical as we got older because we didn't have a place. But we would have, on Christmas Eve at my aunt's house, a happy birthday Jesus party, and she would get a pinata, and we'd hang the pinata. She'd get a cake with happy birthday Jesus, and the baker, you know, at the grocery store would be like, what? Jesus? And we'd be like, it's happy birthday Jesus. And so we did that every Christmas up with all my cousins, and that was really fun to have that celebration.
Cool. Thanks, you guys. Okay, let's talk siblings. You all have kids with siblings. What are the best ways that you fostered close sibling relationships? We'll start there.
I don't have a ton to say about this either, because my kids were not super close growing up. They're 4 years apart. My daughter was born first, and then my son, and Casey is She was real bossy, and Tucker pushed her buttons. And so it's not until actually my daughter got married, which was only 2 years ago, that my kids have kind of forged this really close relationship. And I think it's because primarily of my daughter's husband. My son and her husband are really good friends. And so I think Casey and Tucker have now been able to see each other in a different light and appreciate their nuances and who they are as people. I tried my best when they were younger to get them to be close, but they were never really in school together because Casey was done with high school by the time Tucker entered in. They were a little bit in elementary school, but they were so much, you know, so many years apart it felt. So, you know, they were fine, but they didn't have this, like, great, like, oh, look at the Page kids. They're so friendly to each other and close. But now I would say that they're much closer, and it's not even any of my doing, ironically enough. It's I think, the work that God has done in their lives and then just them getting older, and they're both in the same profession, which is interesting, and so they have that in common. So, yeah, nothing that I did or Mark did. It's just the way it is now.
I would just say the sibling relationship is a great area to teach your kids that we have to behave a certain way even when we don't feel like it. And this is a really hard area as a mom because they see us at our worst. And so there's some dissonance in what we're saying and what we're doing a lot of times. But I mean, that's the goal, is they see this in your marriage. And it's the goal between the two of them is, you know what, even though he's bugging me, I'm going to be kind anyway, because that's the character that God wants me to have. And so it's just a good opportunity to speak into that on a regular basis. In that vein, I used to have my kids, if they were fighting and they couldn't work it out to where it came to me, they both got punished. So that taught them to kind of figure out a way to work it out before it got to me, because then neither one of them liked what happened when it got to me. But if it really was just they were up here and they couldn't see eye to eye to get over their hurt feelings, I would have them go in their rooms and write a list of things. This is obviously when they're old enough to write, but write a list of things that they appreciate about each other, and then come and read the list to each other. And they never, it never didn't have the desired effect. They always were able to be humble with each other and apologize and all that by the time they got through the list, because it just helped shift their perspective.
I wish we would have done that. We always reminded them, I have three boys, and the oldest and the youngest are 7 years apart, so it's a pretty good span. But we always tried to remind them that they were each other's best friends, and that their relationship would need to be separate from us as they grew up. And one of the cool things now to see them, and they kind of come in and out of different phases. My oldest and my youngest both played the same sport, and when Kyle went off to college, my youngest was still pretty young and was idolizing, you know, Kyle and what he was doing, and then kind of those roles flipped, and now Spencer and Trevor are working together here at church, and they spend a lot of time together. But when they all just on their own, you find out, oh, they went surfing together today, or they went to breakfast together, and you're like so excited, and then you're like, but we didn't ask us. But then inside you're like, that is the desired effect. Like, they are get together independently of us as parents. Like, it's not because of a family thing or an obligation. It's because they truly are friends and enjoy each other's company. And I think, you know, they weren't always best friends, and they still all have very different lives, but they can come back together, and they have common interests that kind of pull them together.
I'm similar because I have three boys. I don't know if it has to do with having the same sex or my oldest. The difference between my oldest and youngest is 5 years, so they were pretty close. And just ever since they were little, we would say the same thing. Like, you have your brothers. Like, your brothers are your friends, and you have each other, and you're going to have us when – you're going to have each other if Dad and I aren't around. And we always instilled that in them. Also, I like when we, like I said, we would go on vacation with friends, but I would never have them like bring friend. Like they'd be like, "Can we bring a friend?" I'm like, "No, you have your brothers." Like, so I didn't encourage a lot of like bringing like an outside friend into family things because I wanted.